All right, we're live. Welcome to the Church of Jiu-Jitsu, and I'm here with the host of the What's Good podcast, Milton Young, and we're doing a joint podcast today.
How you guys doing? What's good?
What's good? The Church of Jiu-Jitsu is good, and the What's Good podcast is also good. Yeah,
That's right.
that's ass kissing right there. But
How's your week been? Seem good?
very busy,
Very busy.
extremely busy. Yeah,
What's been keeping you busy?
work has been keeping me very busy. I only got one day on the mat, Monday, but it was good though. It was
How's your
two.
training been going? Good?
Yeah. For the little bit that I do,
Yeah.
very, I think pretty well.
Have you had any memorable roles?
I got smashed a few times,
Yeah.
where I should have. But I did pretty well, in some cases, where I could, you gotta be careful when you talk about that, you know what I mean? But
Oh, no, I know what you mean, but I know
whose
one thing.
ass did you whoop? Nobody's.
No, it's not even that, but I know with training, one thing I miss about training the most is, getting out of work, being tired, then locking up and having like a role where it really pushes you to the next level, where you realize, okay, you have like an epiphany in your game where you realize, my base isn't as strong as I thought it would be, or I got tapped in an area where I normally don't get tapped and did because either I gave up mentally or my technique was off or.
I'm glad up we brought up the gave up mentally part. That's one thing I didn't do, and haven't been doing maybe the last three times I rolled
Good.
was and that was something that I tend just it's my nature. You know what I mean? If I'm not gonna win, I'm
Right.
I mean, I don't give up, but
So what,
maybe it's
how has that changed your role though? Because you're
well, you listen to people like Matt Secor, or you listen to anybody that's a next level type of athlete, right? And there's always more in you. And
That's
so
true.
I just decided that I wasn't gonna. I'll give you a good example. I was rolling with a white belt Monday, and we were doing some live rolling. It was a higher level white belt. And he had me at an arm bar, but I wanted to get out of it. You know what I mean? But and so he let go. But I was trying to. You remember Eduardo Tellis and Matt Secor? You might not have seen that over time, but
Oh yeah, I
he
saw
was the
that
turtle
legendary,
guy who just turtled up, right?
yeah.
So that was, I was cool. And I did the limp arm, which I learned from Matt. Just be loose and everything, and then just try and roll. And he let me go, and I go, no, I'm good. You could have yarned it and you had me, but I was trying to get out of it, so. So that was cool.
That
I
was
mean, that was a
cool.
memorable role, I guess, if that's what your question was. So that's, yeah. And a lot of times you go through drills, right? You might be drilling X and Y and Z, and then if you don't go back the next day and the day after, or at least one more time that week, a lot of times,
Just doesn't stick.
yeah. And then if you don't go back for 2 or 3 weeks,
Then
you
you start to
forget
freak
all
and
of it.
stuff.
So like a lot of the stuff I saw at the Danaher Askren wrestling and jiu-jitsu combination seminar, I remember the leg lock part pretty well because it was, I don't want to say it's simple, but the way that John Danaher can explain things to people, he's just very,
Eloquent,
he's very philosophical,
yeah.
obviously, because he's a philosopher, literally. So he teaches in a whole different way.
Tell me more about that because I am, unfortunately, I didn't get to go. I'm just interested in some of the things that they talked about, like especially Ben Askren, because lately he's been a big talk in the UFC, just recently being traded for
Yeah.
Demetrius Johnson. It's kind of interesting.
I think that's awesome.
I think it's cool. I'm kind of confused though. So why do you think that's, tell me why you think that's awesome.
Awesome in. Why do I think it's awesome? Because I think it splits up the beginning of the split up of Monopoly, maybe. It's almost like the ABA and the NBA. There's different, maybe
So you're
league.
saying because Bellator,
Maybe that's a different league than
it is a
the
different league,
UFC.
but I guess what Demetrius Johnson has brought to the sport And then when he's like a proven superstar, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably one of the best athletes, one of the greatest fighters the UFC has ever seen. And we traded him off for Ben Askren, who we are in one, he's the best. Well, you say he's undefeated. I'm not questioning his credentials whatsoever, but I'm just trying to understand, like, why is there so much excitement against Ben? Because Demetrius is a proven athlete. He's a proven champion.
Right.
He lost once, and now he's gone. And now we're bringing somebody in who hasn't even defeated. I mean, his first fight is going to be Robbie Lawler. And it's not even the Robbie Lawler that we know.
Right.
It's the new, unfortunately not the same, lesser version of the Robbie we know, you know?
Could be, yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting fight, but I don't see that the same caliber fighter. So why the trade?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, especially with Dana White and Ben not getting along. Maybe Dana. I heard Joe Rogan say this actually, and like any podcast, you're gonna hear people. Oh, I heard it on Joe Rogan, but you know that's where you hear it.
Well, hopefully they'll start hearing it from our podcast.
Right, right. they heard it twice. I heard that on Joe Rogan, but yeah, I think Joe Rogan was saying that maybe, you know, if you knew Dana White the way that I know Dana White, you know, Joe Rogan knows Dana White.
They're like best friends.
Yeah, and he said he's a great guy. That's just business, you know.
Right.
And he thinks maybe he's getting older, and as you get older, and I've been through this myself, you know, I'm 51 going on 52.
Right.
Obviously. But you do reach a point in your life, you know, where you have, like in my case, I have a son who's going to be 25. He's in the Air Force. My daughter's 16. So you get close to empty nest mode. You know what I mean? And you're, what, 13 years younger than me, right?
Yeah.
Right. So maybe it's just something you at that age, some people go through something where they become nicer. You know, they just, maybe they've accomplished what they consider success, maybe at a higher level than what they expected. And then they kind of just, I don't know, get it together.
I see what you're saying.
Hopefully. I mean, because that's not in his personality. So that to me, you know, might just be a personality change for the better. You know, people do change, but for the better. You know, I have over the years, for sure.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, the other thing with Ben, I guess when you start to think about it, I heard that he's a phenomenal talker. Some of the speeches that I've seen him do, or just some of the talks I've seen him do, he can promote a fight. He likes to get on social media. He likes to get people stirred up.
Definitely.
He's also, when I watch all of his fights, everyone that I've seen him fight, they're always saying it's a perfect matchup, you know, the wrestler between the striker. And from what I understand, Ben Askren is one of the best wrestlers we've ever seen, and with his own unique style. And once he gets you down, you're down. He's like a worse version of Khabib, if that's imaginable. Would you agree with that?
I'd love to see him and Khabib, and then we'll find out.
Why, though? Just because...
Oh, that's a great match. I mean, maybe a catchweight... Well, they can both fight at 155. They can both fight at welterweight.
And they're both
about the same size.
And they both have the same style, right?
I think that'd be a great fight.
Yeah.
It's either I don't know what would happen.
Sambo style wrestling versus American style wrestling, I guess you could say.
With some jiu-jitsu mixed into it. Well, you know, because definitely. Ben has a lot of, he uses jiu-jitsu, but.
With his own form. So what were some of the things he was talking about at the seminar?
Just some simple takedowns, just basic stuff that you wouldn't normally see. Like I definitely haven't seen it because I grew up in Argyle, New York,
right?
Which maybe we have 3,000 people left here.
Yeah.
And we even have less cows too. You know what I mean? But I mean, we didn't even have a wrestling program.
Right.
So you're not even exposed to the, you know, the technique. Nomenclature, any of that.
Right.
You know, is that the right word? Nomenclature? Wording?
Yeah.
Yeah, the words they use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd rather ask than.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that they take down or like?
Well, the problem is that when I go to those things, I'm usually traveling the next day. So if I don't have it on video,
yeah,
it's gone. I need to ask.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing.
Go ahead.
I've learned that when you go to seminars, just so you're able to retain a lot of the information that you're getting, you got to write it down. Else it's just gone.
You know what? The guy that was training with me was writing everything down, and now I see why. But see, in my head, I don't think that way.
Yeah.
But I should. Now I know.
I just never. And you'll remember it. I mean, some of the muscle memory will be there, but.
Right.
And you always learn these unique things from these every one of these seminars that I've been to.
Right. But you only get to drill them about 10 times. So,
that's why I say drilling.
I think to your point, write it down.
Yeah, you got to write it down.
You got to write it down.
It's so huge. So I'm excited for to see what Ben does in the UFC. I think a lot of people are excited because of his style. One thing that I think, the reason why I think he's also was traded in and not going to be accepted by someone like Dana White. And tell me if you agree. I think that Ben Askren's style, just like Khabib's style, is a style that's hard for a promoter to promote because it's all about being on the ground. There's not a lot of glory to it, like a striking match, you know?
Right.
Like, if you look at all the big champs that the UFC is trying to promote, a lot of them. Oh,
you're talking about selling it.
Exactly.
To the
mass. Jet,
yeah. Okay.
And that's what the UFC is a $4 billion, was just purchased for a $4 billion company, so it's right. Got. Now, I see some of the moves that it's making, joining with the NFL.
Right.
You see some of the UFC fighters getting involved with some of the Fox, and that means if you're joining with the NFL, they're associated to Fox. Mm. So that's just more exposure. So they want superstars that have knockout power, that are strikers. That's why I think someone like Khabib has a record of 26.
Yeah, and Askren is 27 or no.
Exactly. Because they're going to make these guys grind out these law with everybody.
Right.
Then no one, I'm not saying no one knows, but no one's really excited to see. But they have this long record of crushing a lot of really, really good athletes that just don't get the shine as like some of these strikers.
Right.
That's why I think someone like Conor McGregor, he's flashier to expose. So that's why you see him in, I think, a year going from, say, almost a nobody to a champ.
Yeah, I think it was like 4 years.
No disrespect.
No, I mean from he bought his father a yacht and he named it, I think it was 208 or whatever the number was, but that's how much money he got on the dole or whatever. What do they call it over there in England?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if you have whatever
the exchange?
Your assistance.
The currency?
Social assistance.
Okay.
Right? Because he was, you know, he was training.
Right.
And so he was on, I forgot what that name is they use over there in the UK. But so anyway, he bought his father a yacht and named it the 208 or something like that, or just so he could remember that that's how much his check used to be every week.
Right. But I think that's probably why the UFC or Dana White doesn't like him as much, because it's going to be hard to promote him because no one likes his style. And I've seen him fight from like a grappling standpoint. He's someone you want to watch. He's amazing with his transitions, his control.
Right.
It's a work of art. But for the common watcher, they don't know what's going on.
Right.
You know, it's like, I remember I was, I used to travel a lot, and I was drinking some wine, some super expensive wine. I couldn't even appreciate it for what it was because I didn't understand the ingredients.
Right, I wouldn't either. Right.
Exactly. So it's the same thing, unless you're in it with UFC, you don't understand, like, the brilliance of what Astron's doing or Khabib's doing because you don't understand the ingredients, like, what the transitions are.
Right.
The amount of control, the amount of power, the amount of energy it takes to actually execute the way these people are doing it. You know what I mean? They make it look so easy because it's so many reps and just
that's what it is, too. I mean, it's reps.
Oh, yeah. Because it's over and over, relentlessly.
Right. Well, not to interrupt you, but talking about reps, and we were talking about Quora earlier.
Yeah,
but I do answer some questions on there.
Yeah, like we should do some questions tonight.
One of them was like a white belt, and I got off on a tangent, and I forgot. forgot what I'm talking about.
No, you were talking about some questions off of Quora that you had to answer.
Yeah, but I don't remember what it was exactly now. And that's okay.
What's one of the cool questions you had to answer?
You're going to make me look it up, aren't you? That's okay.
Well, Quora is an interesting website for a lot of people that don't know what Quora is. It's just a reference site for pretty much anything. It started out for business professionals that would just go in as a resource asking other business professionals or experts or novices or whoever just to exchange and collaborate ideas and answers to questions that they have. And what Steve was saying is that he goes on the site sometimes and answers some questions that people have about jiu-jitsu.
For white belts. Because
yeah.
I'm a blue belt, so yeah. I would really don't have any business answering any others. I really don't.
No, I understand. I respect that. And I hope that a lot of people take that same approach instead of giving poor advice on a site like Quora. But it's a cool site for people to check out. If you have any kind of questions, I mean, even when I was building the podcast, I would jump on Quora, ask questions, and would give you some direction. It pretty much covers everything from business to personal life to, you know, what else? Art, business development, art, anything you can think of. You really just jump on, ask the question.
Well, here's a good example. Okay, here's one that comes up. In a street fight, which one would help you more, Muay Thai or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Right.
So
what do you think?
If you're going to pick one, I'm going to go with Jiu-Jitsu.
And why is that?
Because whatever, this, if we use the 80-20 rule, let's say 80% of all fights or all fights eventually will go to the ground. Right?
Exactly.
So I would pick Jiu-Jitsu first. And, well, Samson and Moses Bahati are headed over to Thailand Monday the 12th for like 3 weeks to go train Muay Thai.
Right.
So they'll have both those. You know what right, I mean? Exactly. So if you can do that, not to go to Thailand and do it, but I mean, you can train anywhere. But
in a street fight, the reason why I would pick Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is because I think that is the most efficient form of self-defense because of what you were saying. Everyone says that all fights start on the feet. I don't necessarily agree because if you're a martial artist, you know that you dictate when the fight starts.
Right, I mean? With the distance.
Exactly, with the distance and the control. So if I'm going to start a fight, I'm going to make sure that I'm within distance to control you and take you down to the ground. That's when the fight starts.
Right.
So fights can start on the ground, and all fights end on the ground. And I feel even with Muay Thai against wrestling, I'm not just looking for a one-off or one. If it's self-defense, it's going to be like, what kind of self-defense can I use that's going to allow me to survive the situation long enough so help can come? Because right. You're not always going to be able to beat the person. That's one thing I've learned with jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Like, I've gone up against a lot of people on the mat where they had size and technique and strength and experience, so I was smoked.
Right.
But for 5 minutes, all I was doing was using my technique to survive.
Right.
So if I was looking at a way to defend myself, I want to use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. In a fight, just to be flashy, and this fight where there's a winner and there's a loser at the end of the day, Muay Thai would be fun.
Right.
You know, but if I'm going to put my life in what am I
going to dedicate? You mean in a street fight?
In a street fight. No. Just like in if I was stepping into the ring.
Oh, okay. To do that. Right.
But
right.
If I'm saying if my life is on the line, I want to know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Right. Know? And there's one other thing, too, is with striking, people, that's kind of a natural thing you can do as a three-year-olds.
Exactly.
Throw punches, right?
Right.
I don't know where they learn them, but they do it. You know, same way they learn how to walk. Maybe they see it.
They do. They see it and they mimic it.
Yeah. But jiu-jitsu against somebody who's unskilled, you know, somebody your size, right?
Right.
Against me, if you're completely unskilled, right? Unless you catch me, I'm going to be like a monkey around your back and you're going to be, what is going on? What's going on? And you're, right?
Exactly.
I mean, because I have had, you know, everybody's had the opportunity. Well, you won't because you're not 150 pounds, but,
right.
You know, where you weigh 140, 150, 160, 170 pounds and a D1 wrestler comes in or, you know, just somebody or a JUCO wrestler comes in and, you know, they're just a big dude, you know, they're 230 pounds and 6 foot and built and 22 years old.
Right.
And you can hold them down.
Yeah, exactly.
For a little while. 3 weeks later, you can't.
Right.
But that doesn't matter because I think the point I'm trying to make is the first time you roll with them, it shows you what would really happen.
Exactly.
I mean, you can imagine the strikes that would be involved.
The reason why you're saying 3 weeks later is because they're going to learn the fundamentals.
And they have massive leverage, strength advantage. And once they learn a little bit of technique and you have that strength, well, look at Wade.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I think he's a two-stripe white belt.
Yes.
He would probably smash me over and over and over again. Maybe not because he's taken 6 months off, but
right,
you know, but I would still expect him to because he's learned enough and he's strong. You know how strong he is. He's strong.
He's very
dude.
Strong. It's very strong.
You know, so.
All right, let's do another question. I like this.
You like that one? This is called Dead Air. Do you know how to sing? I don't. I could be a real ass and say, we need to go back to the question portion. Sorry.
Are you cutting weight or anything?
Me?
Yeah, you're just staying training to...
No, I'm trying to gain weight. I'm eating the American diet right now, which means anything and everything.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to put back all the weight that I lost from keto back on. I don't mean that in a negative way because I needed to lose it. But
how do I train in jiu-jitsu with a herniated disc? Answer to that is you don't.
There are answers. There's three of them. No one can give you that answer.
Well, I mean, the way I would answer that question is this. When you're injured, there's no, even if you're training for something as to be a professional athlete, you have to be able to nurse your injury back to the point where it's no longer an injury. Now with jiu-jitsu, you're always going to be training with some kind of injury. But the way to train with something like that is there's mental reps that you can do. There's certain movements that you can do in terms of working on actually strengthening your own back or whatever it is. But as far as rolling and really getting at it, I wouldn't be doing that, you know, with a herniated disc.
I wouldn't be doing much of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I guess get it fixed.
Yeah, go talk to a physical therapist and get that strength back and still go to class, still sit there and absorb what the teacher's talking about or professor's talking about, write it down so you're still getting that knowledge and also do mental reps. I mean, there's been documented situations where people that you have one group of people that, and you can attest for this, where they don't, I think they were doing it for a basketball team, and they had three groups. One group would actually go out and practice every single day. The other group would just stay inside the gym locker room for a month and just go through and do the mental reps that they needed to do continuously. And then the other group, what did they do? Maybe they only had two groups.
For this conversation, they only had two groups.
Yeah, for this conversation, they had two groups. But at the end of the day, what ended up happening is that you would think that the group that was out there consistently practicing physically would be able to outperform the group that was inside, that was only doing it mentally. But that wasn't the case whatsoever. It was the fact that the people that were inside and were studying the case, like going through the reps mentally, they were actually outperforming the people that were on the court practicing.
I believe that.
Yeah. So that's one thing that you can do if you are injured. But just keeping your head in the game, going through perfect practice mentally, visualizing, and going to class and still just listening. But getting in there and actually even doing the drills, you could really just tweak that thing the wrong way. I call it mental jiu-jitsu and go see a physical therapist and just nurse it back that way.
And
it's no longer that type of injury.
At most jiu-jitsu academies, somebody knows a good physical therapist.
Yeah, but let's circle back to what I said about training with injuries. So, I mean, like, you're always going to have bumps and bruises in jiu-jitsu. And I wouldn't necessarily classify them as injuries per se, but there's those nagging injuries that almost never go away, like that bruise or a certain knot or a certain tweak in, you know, your finger or something. Those things like are jammed fingers.
I jam the same finger.
Things like that. You can train through those things by taping things up, but anything that's an injury where, you know, you're experiencing discomfort at night, you can't sleep, you shouldn't be training with something like that. Right. You know, I feel.
Yeah.
Anybody would think that.
And to your point, if you travel for business like I do, which it sounds like I'm complaining all the time, but I guess I am. But it's almost the same as if you're injured.
Right.
Because you can't train. So what I do is I have a podcast about jiu-jitsu, which helps me talk about jiu-jitsu and stay in touch with it. But I also, you know, watch a lot of it, you know, on Instagram, on Facebook, YouTube. So, you know, and I communicate with, you know, people that do jiu-jitsu on a daily basis too and talk about it. So I don't know why it's such an obsession. That's what I want to get to the root of. You know,
that's very funny because the next question I have right here is, go ahead, read it.
You might want to, because by the time I look over there, you have to.
Why is Brazilian jiu-jitsu so addictive?
Oh, there you go.
Since what you were just about to give me the answer to that. Why do you think it's so addictive?
Why do I think it is?
Yeah.
For me, I can speak for me. I think it's addictive because it's a place you know you can go. It's a safe place. Everybody there, for the most part, is a really good person, right? And people are all there to learn self-defense, maybe, and exercise. I'll be here. Here's another thing, and this kind of gets a little bit off track of what we're talking about, but I hate to exercise. I detest it. I don't like it.
Right.
I don't like to lift weights. I don't like to do any of that. So, but I love to grapple. I've always loved to fight. You know, I missed the window when I was little, you know what I mean? And I, you know, got married pretty young and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's a lot of it. You know what I mean? It gives you a place where you can,
So you think about this, you're talking mainly about the social aspect of it.
Well, no, I mean, for me, I have social anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. So that helps me a lot. And, one of the things, and Eddie Fivey has helped me out a lot with this, is to focus outward instead of focus inward. Because right. When you have social anxiety, and I'm sure there's millions of people that do jiu-jitsu. Well, I don't know how many people do jiu-jitsu. I'd like to know, but there's X percent that have that. And, you know, one thing that helped me was to not look inward. Like, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? But just forget about that. Get out there and talk to people.
Right.
Shake their hand. Say hi. Look them in the eye. Learn their name.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm trying to do, is learn their name. And it seems, you know, over the past few weeks, that's helped out a lot, you know. And we talked about me cutting off Xanax and all that. I did cut it off. Bad mistake. Don't do that. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, I mean, I was on prescription, you know what I mean? But I'll need to wean off it. Because I went cold turkey. Boo. That was not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think, well, for me, why do I think it's jiu-jitsu is so addictive? I think it's a lot of what you said, but to add to that, I feel that there's a huge part of it that's like the physical aspect of jiu-jitsu and the way you push yourself mentally, you know, when you're rolling, you get into that meditative state, you are constantly learning something that you can apply to your everyday life, that you can apply to your confidence, that you can apply to being able to actually defend yourself in a real life scenario.
Right.
It's like you're leveling up in something that is, it's actually tangible in the sense that if something were to go down, you have the confidence to defend yourself and your family.
You just answered my question the way that I should have answered it. No, you really did.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, but I mean, and let's think about it, because there's more elements of it too, because there is that social dynamic. I mean, I can say, luckily for me, training at C-Corps, in the short period of training there, I've met friends that I know are going to be lifetime friends. Just because of how what we've trained through, how we've helped each other, how we've been there to each other, the connection that you have.
Right.
When you're on the mat rolling with somebody, I mean, you really begin to know, learn who they are. Because you see when they begin to break mentally.
Right.
You feel when they begin to break physically. You guide them. They guide you. You learn. You can feel when they're getting better.
Right.
Not just because you're not getting better or because, you know, they just had a good night. You can actually feel when they're moving differently and they're making better decisions. And I think that part of that addiction comes from being exposed to that constantly. It's like you're, when you're leveling up at making better decisions on the mat, you're leveling up at making better decisions throughout life.
Right.
And if you're smart enough to pull back and say, okay, where is this coming from? Like, what's been that improvement? What's the common denominator here? Or what's changed so it's no longer the common denominators or whatever that is.
Right.
Whatever that is. But anyway.
Delta.
What's changed? Yeah.
Differential.
Yeah, something. There you go. So what's the difference? What's changed? You realize it's because of this this art form, this martial arts that allows me to express myself, which also allows me to constantly challenge myself to make better decisions because you don't want to make the same mistakes, whether it's because you want to be better for yourself or because you want to be a better training partner or because you want to improve on something. You take the same approach to it when you're off the mat as you do.
Yeah, I can feel that.
You agree with that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I can feel it.
Yeah.
You know, I have felt that in my life. Yeah.
Exactly.
So
that's why I'm saying out there, like, I think a big part of why we started our podcast is that we want people that are listening, because there's a lot of people that are in these gutters or stuck with certain things.
Yeah.
Maybe they're stuck with, you know, for me, it was stuck with the job that I was in. I didn't like the job that I was in.
Right.
But I didn't have the courage to do anything about it. I'm going to say, how did training jiu-jitsu give you the courage to do something about it? Because there's like this rude awakening that you can do anything. Like when you're rolling, when you're the lowest I got down to when I was training jiu-jitsu was 170 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was because of the rolling I was doing, the diet I was doing.
You know what? I remember like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The first time I saw you, how long, you've been training Muhammad long?
Yeah, about 2 years, 2.5 years ago now.
Yeah, you were nowhere.
No, this.
No. And I'm not saying you're overweight. You're just, you're huge. No. You know what I mean?
I built a little differently. Well, now. But
just 80 pounds heavier than me. That's all.
Yeah, but the thing is that
that's why he was kind enough to put his chair down. So he's the same. He's like Hicks and Gracie. When you take a picture with him,
yeah,
he does that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the picture that he took with me, he's like 1.5 inches taller than me. He went like this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know if I just noticed that, but I think he's that type of person, you know?
Yeah, he's a different being. Meeting him was it's kind of life-changing.
It was weird. Yeah, it was cool.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why it's so addicting. Here's another question. So why do you think most people quit at blue belt?
I have a theory.
Wait, let me hear you.
Okay. There. Because I think once you get to blue belt, and I heard Eddie say this Monday night, when you're a blue belt, you are considered able to defend yourself on the street against an untrained person without a weapon.
That's very true.
Those weren't the exact words, but it was very close to that.
Right.
I think that because I can walk around in Birmingham by the airport, which is a bad spot. Yeah. You know, I get, you know, visiting the paper mills that I go to, sometimes they're in big cities, but usually you're not in a good area.
Right.
And you're not staying in a good area because the nicest hotel that doesn't have bars on the windows is 100 miles away. So I used to carry knives with me. I couldn't bring my pistol with me because it's in New York. They don't have reciprocity with other than Vermont and maybe somewhere,
right,
Wyoming or something stupid like that, you know? So once I started doing jiu-jitsu, I just stopped bringing my knife with me. I don't want to stab anybody.
Yeah.
Now I know I can just control them.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And I've had instances where people have tried to take money out of my pocket. You know, a little kid and a big guy. The little kid stuff. I mean, you know how it works.
No, I know exactly. So why do I think people stop training at blue belt? what are some of the things I say? Well, I think a big part of it is that, you know, blue belt, you're right, you are pretty proficient in being able to defend yourself. You're proficient in the actual art form. You understand what's happening.
Right.
You know, you have a higher understanding of, you know, the techniques.
Right.
You have a higher grasp of what you're trying to do in terms of leveraging base, weight distribution, balance, all those things, and you can manipulate those a lot more.
Right.
But I think there's also like a psychological thing that happens because you're right, because you're such at such a higher sense of proficiency, I guess you could say, is that you're like, all right, I don't really need to learn anymore. Now it's just a matter of like timing in terms of putting in the time to get better at those things.
Right.
So it's kind of an easy place to quit, I guess.
Yeah, because unless you're going to make that commitment to go all the way.
Yeah.
Because I've never heard the phrase, why does everybody drop out at brown belt?
Exactly.
I don't think. Or purple belt. Right.
Exactly. You know? And that's why they say don't get a tattoo until you have your purple belt.
Yeah. Right?
Is that the rule?
Uh-oh. I already have one.
Yeah.
But it's a wedding ring.
Yeah. Exactly. But they say don't get a jiu-jitsu tattoo until you get your purple belt, because that's just like a rule of thumb. And I think it's just part of what we just said, because
yeah,
you don't want to be walking around quitting with just getting your blue belt.
Right.
That doesn't really separate yourself.
Right.
What I do think is amazing in this this art, this martial art, is that the higher you get up, the less of those belts you see. You know, you see a lot of different white belts.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you see less blue belts, you see less purple belts. And when you were first started training, right?
Right.
It was probably even worse. Like there wasn't you didn't really see a purple belt walking around or brown belts walking around.
No, we had belts. They had
Well, yeah, you were training a
couple of black belts, maybe. Yeah, there must have been at least two.
Right.
And a slew of brown belts, a slew of purple belts who were murderers.
Right.
And but they were, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And so
that's the other thing too. I'm glad that
I don't mean murderers, but you know what I mean.
No, but it's true that there's for people that don't understand, like I think everybody has like this what do you call it when you have like an alter ego, right?
Right.
And when you step on the mat and you're rolling, sometimes that alter ego comes out. And some of it comes out in the form of a savage or a murderer.
Right, right, yeah.
And when you're trying to win or you're trying to survive, because that's what you are, you're replicating 100% as close as you possibly can without hurting your training partner, without yanking or pulling or anything.
Right.
And when you're trying to survive, I've had guys rip their belt off and try to wrap it around my neck.
Is that Secor? Because that's what he did to Kirill his first day at jiu-jitsu. You can ask him about it.
I don't think, but he didn't know what he was doing, but he knew he was trying to
survive.
Oh,
he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, that's true. I forget what we're talking about. But anyway.
With all due respect, Professor.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But that goes to speak. I mean, when you're trying to survive, you're going to do anything, right?
In the real world.
In the real world.
Yeah.
In the real world.
And you know, that's a good point. I forgot who said it now, but it was Chuck Holland.
What did he say?
He taught a class last week or the week before, and he was explaining the way that when you get at the higher levels, it becomes much more technique than energy expenditure.
Right.
That's a good like point. Way more. So it's not like they're not in shape. They're certainly in way better shape than I am by far. But they don't need to use it as much. So they're not going to get tired. So I think what he says, well, you know, I can do this for an hour or maybe longer. I forget how long he said, but an hour. If I hear more than 30 minutes, I'm impressed. You know okay. what I mean? Because 30 minutes to me, I'm whooped. You know, that's, what's that, 5 minute rounds?
Yep.
That would be a lot. I think the most I typically do is maybe 4 or 5. And that would be a long jiu-jitsu rolling session for me.
What's the longest you've gone in one roll?
I think 9 minutes with Samson Bahati.
How was it? How?
He was trying to get me in a I forget what it was because I don't remember it, but he had me in a triangle for, no, rear naked choke or triangle for 9 minutes.
When?
So I just, and I hadn't trained in like 6 or 7 months. I just knew.
So you were just constantly defending yourself the whole time.
I spazzed out, hit my head. So, no, I mean, I defended like I was I did what I learned as a white belt. Just defend, defend, defend.
Right. So here's,
So I lasted.
Exactly.
To me is a victory.
That's what we were talking about earlier, you know? So here's a question I'm going to ask because I've heard it before. I don't really know if, I think it's true to a certain degree, but in a role they say that if you are a higher rank and you're rolling with a lower rank and you don't tap then the lower rank wins because he survived you from being tapped. We don't really roll with that type of...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I've heard it before. I mean, but at C-Corps, we don't really roll with that type of mentality. We really roll with, like, let's make sure that we both get the most out of this role as we possibly can.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And we push each other to a level where we're not trying to break each other.
Right.
But we know that if that person were to get into a real-life scenario in that situation, that we know as a training partner that we did maximum of our velocity or capability to make sure that we applied a maximum effort
right.
for them to be able to survive or accurately defend themselves. Right. You don't want to give anybody any fake hopes like, oh, yeah, their arm bar really works, and then they go out and try to do it
right.
the same way they did it in class and it did not work. And
but sometimes,
they get their ass kicked.
Yeah, but you know? Sometimes people have done this to me, and that's what I'll do, like with a lower-level white belt. That's,
right.
You know, when you can still tell they're a little bit.
Like, yeah, they learn.
I grappled with a younger gentleman, maybe in his 20s the other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's my size or bigger, and he was like and I heard this from like three different people that day.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not a mean looking person and I'm very small. So, but they're like, you know, just go easy. And I'm like, they're a white belt, right? I'm like, I'm definitely going to go easy. I said, we'll do what we do, you know, we'll go through, we'll talk. And right. if you get caught in something, I'll try and explain how you got caught and then we'll switch it around and we'll work on it. You know what I mean? Cause I learned from that.
Yeah. That's how I learned too.
You know? I mean, you can learn a lot by teaching.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know that I can teach, but I guess in that small section.
All right, so you want to do another one?
Let's do another one.
All right, which is more practical, gi or no gi, jiu-jitsu? It's a very interesting question. First of all, let's explain what gi is or no gi for the people that are just learning the grammar.
Right.
So no gi is... when you're wearing like traditional shorts or.
That's a rash guard.
Oh, yeah, we call it rash guard.
Basically, that's a rash guard, and it's. I think they started out in surfing.
Yeah, but for the people that can't see it, so what a rash guard really is just like those Under Armour.
Pretty much, without all the seams.
Yeah. That's all it is, and they wear your shorts. But there's nothing for you to grip onto. So it's applicable to like real life scenario. If someone was supposed to grab you and they're just wearing a t-shirt and like shorts or pants,
right.
That would be like the scenario that you're fighting.
And one thing, sorry to interrupt you, but other thing is it's not legal, so to speak, to grab
the clothing.
You know, when you have a gi on, that's cloth you can use, but no gi, you could grab it. Like I could grab this right here, right? But this was no gi, that wouldn't be allowed.
Exactly.
Right, at the grab.
So short grabbing or anything. Exactly. Right. You have to grab the body.
Hopefully I didn't pinch your arm too hard.
No, that's fine. So what a gi is a gi is actually the traditional uniform that you wear when you're rolling. You have a belt that represents your ranking in jiu-jitsu, whatever stripes that you have. But it's a lot stronger cloth, and it has, there's a lot more grips. You know, you can grip and control and leverage from much more areas, and it's accepted. Wherever you can grab, wherever you can form your grip, you can use to form a leverage point. It just makes it more interesting because a lot of people, depending on where you train, can kind of expose you to new moves and different chokes that you can use the gi to do, which you can't. So with, say you can do, how many chokes do you think you can do with the neck? With no gi. Say there's like 10.
Well, you get, let's see, let's think. We have a rear naked choke.
Yep.
You have a guillotine, darce choke, triangle choke. baseball joke, then we're starting to get into weird stuff. Well, right. No, we got arm triangles.
Say there's five, right?
Arm triangle, that makes five real ones.
Yep. But then when you put on a gi...
That's not counting 50% of the body. John Danaher would tear our knees apart if you heard that.
But just for the the argument's sake of making a point. So, but with the gi, you could take all of those and multiply them by five, because depending on the angle and where you leverage,
definitely
you could form all kinds of different chokes. So that just kind of gives you a difference between what the gi is and the no gi. Now, to answer the question, which one's more practical, it really is depends on what you're talking about.
Right.
Like, what's more practical in a real street life, in a real street fight, real life situation? There's no gi.
Right.
Without any question, because it's the best simulation to what's really going on. With gi, you're not going to have those grips that, you know, no one's going to be walking around with one of those, the collar and the belt that you can leverage. It's just not going
to
happen.
Okay, you want me to play devil's advocate?
You can play devil's advocate.
It's getting cold out.
Yeah. So if you can see people, if you see someone walking around because it's cold and they're wearing a gi, a martial arts gi, the last thing you want to do is fight them.
No, but, you know, like you're wearing a hoodie.
Yeah.
Right? So if you were unskilled
and
you were getting in somebody's face and, you know, you have some points that are available there, that thing can be wrapped around your neck.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. So I agree with that. But for, if you're saying like hand-to-hand combat, which you're going to be training for like a gi tournament, or you want to learn then a gi is all the way to go. You know what I mean?
Right.
In terms of practicality. And also, I think that if you're learning like the traditional art of jujitsu, then it's gi all day.
That's
the more practical.
Right.
Because that's where everyone learned, and that's where, it really originated.
And the and the mats aren't as slippery.
Exactly. That's very true.
You know?
And the grips aren't as slippery because you're not dealing with sweat as much.
That's right.
You know?
Right.
So really, it really does change it. But
now,
there's people...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
MMA fighters, right?
Yeah.
Certainly you want to train in no gi.
Exactly. Like, that's a great point.
Like a 10th planet. They don't do gi.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
I can remember walking into Spa City Jiu-Jitsu and when I first started, 2014, and I said the words Eddie Bravo. And three people that were pretty high ranked looked at me with a pretty serious look. And now look at what's going on. You know, those guys are in those tournaments.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like you couldn't mention Eddie Bravo's name. You would get looked at funny. So that just tells you how much. Well,
why was that? Was it because of his style or because of Eddie Bravo?
Well, there was a whole Eddie Bravo
leg lock
versus the Gracies thing. You know, because he.
When he beat him?
2003, Hoyler Gracie, when Eddie was a brown belt, he tapped him in Abu Dhabi, and I think. Yeah. He didn't win the whole tournament, but he
How did this happen? Was it with the leg
triangle?
With the triangle.
Yep. Yep. He got him into, well, he didn't really have his whole rubber guard game, all the crackhead control and all that stuff all named yet, but he had, I forget what it was, but you could watch that video in one of Rogan's podcasts with Eddie, and they go over what he was doing. He was like, you got him in this, you got him in that, and, you know.
See, what's interesting to me with that whole matchup with Eddie Bravo beating him.
The first one or the second one?
Both. Just the whole movement of Eddie Bravo and what he's kind of done with the game and the different aspect of what he's brought into it.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's why everyone kind of gave... Because the leg lock game still, just until recently, I'm just seeing it's now getting the respect that it's kind of deserved the whole time.
At the highest levels.
At the highest, exactly. Right. And until the highest levels get it, you're always going to get that turn, you know, that look that you're getting, like what you were saying earlier. So I'm glad to see that it's changing, because you're definitely seeing, like you said earlier, what I was talking is, you know, you can't ignore 50% of the body.
Right.
So it's being recognized for what it is. But I think Eddie Bravo was a prodigy, you know, from what I've seen and the way that he's kind of revolutionized his own, little jiu-jitsu, really.
I mean, right.
He came up with his own form of expression.
Right.
Through his own physical, like, it's almost a deformity with how flexible that guy is. But I wouldn't say deformity, but his own physical attributes.
Right.
But what bothers me with his style is this. There's another question in here that the person's asking, what is the right age for, you know, starting jiu-jitsu?
Okay.
But they're also asking, is there an age too late to start jiu-jitsu? And because of what the style of jiu-jitsu that we that Eddie Fivey teaches and Matt Secor teaches, anybody at any age can jump in and do it and be effective,
right?
And defend themselves efficiently against a stronger, bigger, faster opponent. But if you were to use Eddie, if you were to use what Eddie Bravo's technique is, you'd without his flexibility, right. All of those techniques, they're not applicable. You can't do them.
Yeah, that's not self-defense.
That's not self-defense at all.
It is against the people that can do that.
Right.
How many people can do that? 20%, exactly.
And that's my only...
How many Sherwins are C-cores?
Exactly.
A few?
Yeah. So you're very limited on who can apply that. I just don't like that aspect of it. But I do appreciate it for the brilliance that it is, and I do appreciate it for how unique it is. I just wish it was more applicable to more people.
Well, he designed it for MMA fighters specifically, yeah, and only for that.
And I respect it. I totally do respect it. Another thing, what they were saying is, why do you think that there's, well, the question on Quora was, why do you think there's such a low rate of female jiu-jitsu players?
I think we're starting to see that change.
We are. It's slow.
Yeah.
It's slow, but yeah, I agree with you. I think that's starting to change, and I think a part of that is because of the exposure that it's getting.
Especially women's MMA.
Women's MMA, a lot of that. We can give credit to the UFC with some of the exposure they're getting there. What I love seeing now in the UFC is that a lot of the finishes involve jiu-jitsu. You know, a lot of the chokes, a lot of these, every 10 fights, at least six of them are ending with some kind of jiu-jitsu being used,
right,
or being finished because of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and I like to watch those. I mean, I like to watch all of them, but right, like Damian Maia, I like to watch him when he's on.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I prefer to see a submission over a knockout.
Yeah, it's true.
And the guy doesn't get hurt, or the girl doesn't get hurt.
I like to see a submission over knockouts. But I think submissions, like we were saying earlier, doesn't really sell fights. That's the disappointing part, because right, no one really understands what's really going on. They don't know what the technique is.
I'd really like to see what the combat jiu-jitsu numbers are. You know, right, of course, we never will. But.
Right. I think also, let's go back to the question, is why are there less women in the sport? I think because it's a very intimidating thing to do in the beginning with being a male or a female. And then when you're rolling with in males that are intimidating in a gym, predominantly dominated by males, there's a level of uncomfortableness there.
Yeah.
You know? And when you look at the positions that you're getting in with jiu-jitsu and you're getting a strange group of males, it can be hyper uncomfortable. You know, it's hard enough for a male to do it, much less a female. And then, like we said, with some of the roles, like, I don't know if you've ever rolled with, if you've rolled with a female, I would assume.
Right?
But outside of Deja, I've rolled with many females. And it's not comfortable for me now. But when I first started rolling, I remember the first time I rolled at Eddie Fivey's with a female. I don't know who she is actually now. But I remember walking over, getting into her guard. And it just felt uncomfortable for that split second. And then when the timer went off, it didn't matter.
Mm.
Because that whole time, she's trying to choke me.
Well, what level were you?
I was a white belt. She was a white belt. Oh, no, she was a white belt. I think a 3-stripe white belt. So she was a little bit higher than me.
Okay.
And you could feel it in the way that she was moving. She had a way better grasp of the technique,
right,
applying base, weight distribution. And she did a good job of controlling me.
Right.
I didn't get submitted, and she didn't get submitted. I didn't submit her. We both basically just survived, but she was constantly attacking.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I mean, you're a big dude.
Exactly.
And I'm assuming she wasn't your size.
No, and that's the thing. Like, to see something like that, to see it in real life. And that's what I'm saying with, you know, being able to defend yourself. If, say, someone like that attacked her, let's say I attacked her or someone in my frame attacked her in a parking lot.
Right.
Her real goal is just being able to defend herself long enough for someone to come over and help her.
Or survive, get in the balls, get out of there. I said balls like I'm from Albany.
Right.
But not.
But there have been situations where I've been rolling with higher level females that they've just wiped the floor with me.
Really?
And they're savages. Yeah, because once you understand the technique and you've been drilling it over and over and over again, it's really a chess mass, and you're actually playing. What's that thing with?
Oh, like a Rubik's cube.
Yeah, and once you see the shapes, you can attack those shapes.
Yeah.
So once he manipulates me to move a certain way, or use my strength to keep her off me, and my arms start to tire, and I push up off the floor. There it is. Those are those shapes. And once she forms those shapes, and she can put two of her limbs against mine, one of mine, or three of her limbs against one of mine.
Right.
It's only a matter of time. You know? And that's the intelligence of jiu-jitsu.
Right.
I know a lot of females are interested in learning self-defense. And a lot of them are saying, oh, we should take boxing. And I have a lot of respect for boxing. But I really feel that when you think about jiu-jitsu and what position someone, a male, that's typically attacking a female, is trying to get her in.
Right.
Jiu-jitsu is the way to go.
Oh, yeah. They're in your guard.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why when my daughter was 13, I brought her down 12 or 13 to train jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And that's how I got into it, like we talked about on your podcast.
Exactly.
Not long ago.
And that's what I'm saying to people, women out there, males out there, kids out there. If you're really thinking about something that you, a self-defense that you're really trying to get into, and you really, for whatever reason, but for the main purpose of being able to defend yourself in some kind of altercation, I really think that jiu-jitsu is the way that people should go. Not because I'm a practitioner, and
right,
or not because I have a podcast surrounded by growing an audience interested in jiu-jitsu.
But
I really think when you think about what you're learning,
right,
not just to be able to defend yourself, but also how to become better character and build confidence, it's really the biggest bang for your buck, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it's the best decision.
And it's probably the safest thing to learn. And if you, you know, let's say somebody attacks you and all you know how to do is strike, right?
Exactly.
Now you could get hit with an assault charge.
Exactly.
And you may knock them down. They may hit their head, brain trauma, death, whatever. I mean, that's realistic. That can happen easily. So, you know, jiu-jitsu is the gentle art, I guess that's what it translates from.
Yeah, that's exactly what it translates to. Yeah.
And it's something that you can use to control somebody to a point, and if you need to go further, you can go further.
So here's another question, a really good one. It said, what are some things you wish you knew when you started training jiu-jitsu? It's a good question.
Don't bother wearing a cup. Don't bother wearing a mouth guard.
I do not agree with that.
No?
No.
No.
I need a cup.
I wore one for quite a while, and then I started not wearing one, and I started not wearing a mouth guard. And one thing I noticed was the cup just tended to, it made me feel restricted, like I couldn't move as much.
Yeah.
And I also felt like I was cheating on arm bars.
Oh,
and
right,
I also felt like if I got somebody's back, you know, and you put pressure on them, you're driving. And I have one of those diamond cups.
Yeah, those diamond cups.
Probably not nice to...
No, they're not.
You know, and I'm aware of it. You know what I mean?
So the diamond cup, just to explain that one, it's made out of metal, right? Is that what the difference
is? I believe they originally were made out of metal, but they're basically as good as metal. They're just very light.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you kick that with your foot's in a bad spot.
So when he was talking about the whole, like, leveraging it for arm bars... When you're doing an arm bar, you're really just trying to create a fulcrum with the person's elbow.
Right.
And you're trying to apply as much pressure as you can on the person's elbow to break it or simulate breaking it. Obviously, before you break, it's where the person taps.
Right.
But when you have one of those cups on, it's like
It's not real. Right?
No, yeah, but the fulcrum, the point of which you're applying that pressure is a lot harder.
It's higher.
And it's at a higher point. So the person taps sooner than sometimes they're used to tapping it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty dangerous. It's actually very dangerous. All right, so the cup thing. I got to wear a cup. I mean, there's two reasons. I'm just going to be real to people out there.
I would prefer that you wear one.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, there's a lot of people that would. So there's obviously that purpose. If you're blessed, you should wear one, which I'm very blessed. So I wear one for that. And the other one is when you're rolling with females, like, there is a possibility that things could get, you know, excited. So I feel extra comfortable where I'm wearing a cup. It's just something I'm aware of.
I've never had that thought in my head.
And you know what?
But do you think it's more for them?
It's for both of us.
All right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can buy that.
That's the first, because it's the first thing that that can make the situation uncomfortable if that starts to happen. That's and it's not point. Even because you're thinking of it.
Right.
It's not even, I'm just being real to the viewers out there. Like, I feel a female will feel comfortable if she feels that, as opposed to she feels something else. And there's some, because of the rubbing, the movement, or whatever, someone starts to get excited. It gets uncomfortable real quick.
Right.
And I've heard from females, and that's why I'm excited. I'm gonna have, excited to have some females on my show to discuss this themselves, is that it gets real uncomfortable real quick for both of them when that starts to happen. And they understand, but when a guy jumps up and has to run off to the bathroom, it's obvious.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah.
I guess I need to go more.
Yeah.
Not for that reason, but I mean, just so I can understand.
So I wear it with that comfort. So as they're rolling and they do feel that, they know that there's absolutely no chance whatsoever.
Right.
Also, with guys, it's the same thing. I mean, that could happen in certain situations. Like, you have a Victor that's those deep, but I'm just kidding. Those
deep brown eyes. I was like, what,
you were looking at me.
I got a remote over there, and I can hit stop or just let this go.
I'm kidding. But, yeah, I have to work up. But what's another thing that you thought you wish you knew before you started jiu-jitsu?
Well, the mouth guard thing, too. One thing I learned is that when somebody gets you in a rear naked choke, that mouth guard makes it hurt worse.
Wow.
Until I took it out, because I remember when I started, I would ask Eddie, what kind of mouth guard should I get, right? Because I don't know. Yeah. I always wore the 99-cent ones. He's like, you don't need one. So.
No, you're right. That's cool. But me, once again, I need a mouth guard.
Right.
Because there's been times where I've chopped down or my tongue's been close to being.
Was this early on?
This was early on. But
against
also,
another white belt?
Yep. But still, even now, there's those moments where you're moving too fast or someone's knee comes flying up.
Right.
I'm just glad I had that mouth guard. And so that's another, that's just preference, though, and you learn that through rolling over time.
And that doesn't mean that I won't have one.
Right.
I won't wear a cup, and I won't wear a mouth guard next time I go either.
And it doesn't mean my answer is any better for you.
Right.
But for me, it's the right answer, and for you, yours is.
No, but I appreciate the way that you're thinking about how it applies to the opposite sex, too, because, you know, I never really thought about it because with me, it was just like my daughter's going down there.
Right,
and
right.
I don't care about that. I want to learn how to do self-defense. And at that age, you're not going to worry about that or I'm coming out there.
No, you know what I mean? But you're not. You're not going to worry about those things. What's another thing I wish I knew? I wish I knew how valuable the journey was.
Right.
And I wish I just slowed it down just a little bit and just took it a little bit more. You know, because you hear people preach about jiu-jitsu is about the journey. And you don't take it in. You know, the people that you meet on the mat, the friendships, the technique.
Right.
Just really focusing on learning, you know, the triangle and learning all the efficiencies and where I need to leverage and where I need my weight to be distributed and where I need to move, where my hips need to be and how to work on the squeeze, things like that.
Right.
As opposed to trying to learn, okay, guillotine, all right, next, or just get excited about the next attack.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I just took more time to just slow it down, take in the verbiage, take in the drills, drill it over and over and over again until I move on to the next attack. That's the one thing I wish I'd do, and I think that's part of the journey and just, you know, like, even with some of the competitions, I wish I competed a little bit more to white belt and just realize, okay, it's a white belt. It doesn't matter how many times I get tapped. It doesn't matter if I lose in this competition because it doesn't matter. You know, it's just a test. And I think some of the biggest growth that I've had was one from the competition because when I got back, I knew what I needed to work on.
Right.
You know? So I wish I did that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's true. What do I wish I did more? Stay more consistent.
Oh, there you go.
You know,
speak on that. Yeah.
Just like I told you on your podcast, but you know, I had this grand idea. Okay, maybe I'd be a black belt. I want to be a black belt before I'm 75, right?
Right.
And I think 2 days on the mat. Aim lower, right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
What Eddie Bivey advice to me was, aim lower. So I'm like, okay, purple belt by the age 54? He's like, aim lower. I'm like, okay. Maybe get in a tournament in the next 6 months. Aim lower. Then I'm like, I give up. He goes, when you're not traveling or even when you're traveling, try and be on the mat at least 2 days a week.
So how's that working out for you?
Sometimes I get two, sometimes I get one. You know, this week I went down Monday. I was going to go, maybe I didn't go Monday and I went Tuesday. I forget. No, I went Monday.
Right.
And today's only Wednesday. But then yesterday it was just work. You know, it just got in the way, and I looked at the clock, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to make it.
Right.
It's not possible.
So what was it like? Tell me what it was like the first time walking into a gym after training with Eddie Five and becoming proficient enough, you know, do feel proficient, and then walking into another gym for the first time. And what was that experience? Because I have an interesting story I want to share.
I won't say what gym it was.
Yeah, I won't do that. I won't do that either. Let's not do that.
Okay. I can definitely say...
Tell me where you were, though, at least.
Ballpark?
Yeah.
In the south.
Okay.
Far, at least 1,500 miles from here.
All right.
And it wasn't in Alabama. But it was just different. You know, like purple belts seemed to me blue belts.
Yeah.
And blue belts seemed to me... you know, 50% through a white belt. Mm-hmm. So I think just, and that might be, you know, a regional thing. It might be just that school. It might be, there's a couple of schools that have, well, I went to another school, in the mid-Atlantic states. It could be Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, but, I went to another school. It was run by a purple belt, and it was actually a good, he was actually a good teacher. I made a really good teacher. He ran a good class. And
how was the rolling session after?
I couldn't roll on that one because I wasn't a blue belt yet. And I was like, when we were doing the drills, I was like, okay, this is what we did on day three.
Yeah.
But I get it. You know what I mean? If that's the rule, that's the rule. So
from my experience, it was in Florida. And I was there for a sales convention for Sandler's training. Some sales training, and I brought my no-gi stuff because I knew that I was going to try to roll when I got there.
Right.
It was just something that I kind of had on my bucket list because I had been rolling pretty solid for 2 months at C-Corps, and I was really beginning to grasp some technique. I was really beginning to build my confidence up, and I've been rolling with some of the higher level guys up there, and they were really, you know, putting me through the ringer in terms of pushing me, you know, not letting me take any time off or take any rounds off. I mean, and we were going, I remember we started rolling because it was close to a round of competition, and we were rolling 8-minute rounds, and that's pretty important for another part of the story. So when I got there, it was the last day of the classes for the seminar. So I looked it up, called up the school and asked them, you know, if they had open class. And they said, yeah, you can come in all down, pay the open mat fee was $35, no big deal, is pretty typical.
They made you pay?
Yeah, they made me pay, but I wasn't going to wave C-Corps' name around.
For $35.
Yeah, whatever. But I wasn't going to wave C-Corps' name around, you know?
You know what, though? I say that they made you pay, but when I go to a gym, I'll buy a gi from them. They'll let me roll for free, I'll buy a gi off them.
Yeah, but...
That gi right there, I bought in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Yeah.
Never wore it. And Nick Diaz autographed that.
Cool.
The top part. And the bottom part's down here.
Don't be scared. Don't be cool.
Nate Diaz autographed the bottom. So I've never worn that gi.
Nice.
But I just happened to have it, and it's a standard Gracie Jiu-Jitsu gi, so it was, like, perfect for that.
Right. So when I went to class, when I got the class, paid the fee, people were warming up. Everyone was wearing their gis, which was cool.
Right.
I went in with no gi. The significance of me going in with no gi is they really couldn't tell what kind of belt I was. They really didn't ask.
Good idea.
And it wasn't intentional. It's just how it worked out. So we warmed up. I was impressed with their warming up situation or whatever their
warm-up
routine.
Yeah.
Because they did. I remember them doing 50 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and like I think it was 50 jumping jacks, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot. And it was just right off the rip.
Right.
Which is, it was just impressive, and everybody did it.
I won't talk about the shape, the form, but everyone
right,
did it.
Right.
And that's fine, because one thing when you're doing jiu-jitsu is when you see all these different levels of all these different people being on the mats for different reason, they're all in a different part of learning form.
Right.
Whatever. So I saw that. They did go through some good technique, and they were working on a real slick way and throwing in a triangle. It was just a slick way to slip it in. But what got interesting was when we were, and I was struggling with the technique. The teacher was really good. I mean, it wasn't because of him, but just sometimes the way certain teachers, and let me know if you've experienced this, is the way that they teach the technique, you just can't pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
So I was struggling. So I didn't really look. There was no way to tell by the way I was moving what kind of belt I was. It looked more like a confused white belt just because of the way I was picking up the technique. Right. But it was slick, and I appreciate it because I kind of hide it in my arsenal now. But anyway, moving forward with the story, when it was time to roll, one thing that it's really surprised me, because remember, they were wearing their gis,
right,
so I could see what belt they were. They put me right with a blue belt right off the bat.
Right.
And when they were doing the timer, they threw 8 minutes up on the clock right away.
Yeah.
Which was, I was a little disappointed just because I knew they weren't ready for me.
Did you just go hard right out of the gate?
But I mean, when you have someone that's out of town and you know, you don't know what kind of rank he is or whatever.
They didn't even ask. That's weird.
They didn't ask until after they saw me roll. That's just kind of throwing someone in the burner, you know? Typically, when you're in a gym, you're rolling 3 minutes, maybe five. 8 is if you're training for something.
Right.
So I wouldn't say lucky, but I was fortunate enough to say that I'm training with C-Corps at that school. That's just the level that we train at. You know what I mean? Because you want to keep the pressure up, or you want to be training. But anyway, so I rolled really well with him. I submitted him twice. It was a blue belt. I hadn't gotten my blue belt yet. No, actually, I had just gotten it.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. I was a blue belt. Yeah. So I got their blue belt. I tapped two of their blue belts. The rolls were good, but like you said, I didn't feel like their blue belts were blue belts. I felt that they were white belts.
Right.
And the reason why is because they didn't have the sense of weight distribution. I didn't feel their base.
You saw techniques, but you didn't feel connection, that type of stuff.
And the most important thing, I didn't feel any connection.
Right.
And there was a purple belt where I took his back. And when I took his back, it was amazing how quick the timer went off. Because when I took his back, I was working towards choking him.
Right.
And the reason why I was able to take his back is he didn't ever have any connection with me. He was big. He was strong. He spoke Portuguese. I remember seeing the cauliflower on his ear. So I wasn't intimidated, but I was aware, okay, this guy's got some time on the mat. But when I saw his technique and how he was trying to control me but without any kind of connection, it was more like he was trying to wrestle strength with strength.
Right.
And I was able to use that space that he was creating to get behind him.
Right.
And then close that space, and because of my strength, keep it closed, which was interesting. When I'm at C-Corps or when I roll at E5Es, I can't take a purple belt back.
No.
Unless they're not letting me, but unless I've really, really earned it and they're letting me work something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With all due respect.
I mean, I on occasion might be able to, but
right.
I'm not going to sink my hooks in and flatten them out and get
there's
the
no
choke.
Way that's not happening.
I mean, I might take their back, but then next thing you know, I'm.
Listen, our purple belts don't play that. And it's not,
whatever.
And it's not even in anything like, look, we're badasses or whatever. But look, when you point, when 85, he gives a stripe or he gives a belt, or Matt Secor gives a stripe or he gives a belt.
That's real. That's real.
That's real. So when I walked into that school, I wasn't walking in saying cocky, Eric, and I have a blue belt. But I know Matt wouldn't put that belt around me unless I was a blue belt.
Right.
And I feel that the level of connection that you have to understand, the level of understanding that you have with weight distribution and base, when you have that and you're a blue belt in Matt Secor under Eddie Five, you can go into any gym and survive.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one thing I was able to do.
Maybe except for some of the, you know, if you go out on the West Coast. Or
Right.
Here's something I want to mention. Did you check with Matt or with Eddie before you went to the gym?
No, I didn't.
See, I probably asked Eddie about 50 gyms over the last 4 years.
Right.
Because I may go to them. Like if I'm going to go to New Orleans, you know, I know... Alan Belcher has a school up in Louisiana or Mississippi somewhere. you know, and or maybe there's one nearby.
But I do it intentionally because Matt's actually, he doesn't mind that I do that, but he wants me to do that, let him know when I'm going to the other gym, because a lot of people know who he is and I won't have to pay that Matt fee.
Right.
And they also give a little bit of respect because of the name. But I don't like dropping names like that.
Right.
I kind of like going in under the radar.
But they like to know who you train under, too.
That's also very true, important. Too. Because when I did say it, they did know who he was. And they did represent the game. And things started to make more sense to them.
Right.
But also, there was also a part of me in there that was kind of playing a mental game with myself. Because I had been to that tournament.
Right.
I had been sick during the tournament. And I didn't perform the way I wanted to do. So I was like, all right, did you learn from that tournament immensely? Because the only difference with the tournament, really, let's be honest with each other, you're just going up against new training partners, people that you've never rolled with against.
Right.
And there's some kind of fear to that because you never rolled with them before.
Right.
But what's the worst that can happen? It's the same that what's going to happen inside of your gym.
You just got to tap.
You just have to tap. Yeah. It's the same thing. So when I was going to this other gym, I was playing this mental warfare with myself, was saying, okay, look, let's can you face these guys in here. Let's roll with them. I wasn't going in there to rip anybody's head off, and I didn't.
Right.
But I went in there, defended myself. I did it confidently. When I left, I know that they kind of respected the brand a little bit more. So that was what I wanted to be able to do.
Right.
But my experience was similar to yours when I went to another school. The belts that they were wearing, and I'm not saying this is for every school. I'm just saying this is based on my experience. Right. It just didn't seem like they had the proficient understanding in those belts to be certified in those colors, you know?
Right. And there has been, I mean, there's a Ross Martial Arts down in Demopolis, Alabama, and actually went in and talked to them 2 or 3 weeks ago. I stopped in and the owner's wife and his son were there. He's grown up a couple of years since the last time I saw him. And, but he remembered me, and he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. That's right. You were the guy with the old man strength, you know. But he was 16 or 17 at the time. But that's an exception for sure. And I'm sure there's many, many exceptions.
So here's another question. What's it like to win a jiu-jitsu match?
I don't know. You tell me. I know what it's like to get smashed.
What's it like to win a jiu-jitsu match? It's like anything, winning anything, but I think in the form of you're proud because, you know, if you're competing in a jiu-jitsu match, you're usually competing in a school environment and your team's usually watching you, your professor's usually watching you. And when you win, it's kind of you're showing that you understand to a higher level. You understand the criteria that you're learning and that you're growing and that you're progressing. And the fact that you even stepped on the mat, it makes everybody proud. So to have your hand raised is very exhilarating. It's a rush that you don't really understand because of the adrenaline rush you just experienced, you know, prior to that. So the endorphins are running through you. Your team's watching. They're cheering for you. Your coach is watching. He's proud of you. You know, if you have family that's there. So it's exciting. It's the only thing I can really compare it to is when I was running in track in high school and I would win and my team would be excited for me.
Right.
It's the same thing,
right?
You know, it's at the same level of excitement. Because if you really, really worked, and if you had to do some kind of weight cutting, and every day for the 2 months or a month, or for some of us weeks, that you're preparing for that, to have that victory to say, okay, I beat something. Because there's a level of fear, there's a level. I'm sure that there's injuries that you're battling through,
right?
But to be able to battle through all those things and persevere and have your hand raised at the end and have your team there to recognize that. I mean, it's just something you really, it's going to be different for everyone, but it's something I think everyone should experience. You know?
Yeah. I'm going to put that on my goal list.
Oh yeah.
To win a match.
You know, like Eddie was saying before, I didn't really understand what he was saying. Aim low. Cause that's not something, you know, Matt Secor would say, but I understand the principle of it. And that would be something Matt Secor would say in the sense that sometimes you just have to set small goals before you can achieve big ones, you know?
And it depends on the person, too.
Exactly. Like it does depend.
I tend to go,
right,
and then I'll just focus on that. I'll get there. But
it's exciting. I mean, it really is exciting, especially with all the nerves that you battle with
right
the night before your first competition. It's a rush, you know, and there's nerves that go through you that you wouldn't believe.
But it's there. So what else? There was actually another question I wanted to ask you about. Why do you think UFC, this is the way I view UFC, and the question I was going to ask you was, why do you think more people don't watch the UFC? Because to me, I look at the UFC like this. Do you remember when you were in high school and there was going to be a fight in the school? Kids would run around and say, like for me, it was Bobby Rose and it's going to be fighting DJ Johnson, right?
Cemetery at 3:30.
At 3:30, right? And you knew that, you know, Bobby Rose was a wrestler, you know, two-time state champ, and DJ Johnson was the Golden Glove champ for the last 3 years, and his two brothers were Golden Glove champs, and these two were going to fight because of whatever stupid reason they were going to fight. You wanted to be there because he was going to be the wrestler versus...
And they knew how to fight.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
Saratoga High School.
Okay. That's big enough for you.
Oh, yeah. So there would be a huge gathering, and these dudes would throw down. And you have the wrestler that's trying to get a hold of the boxer and the boxer. That's the same thing that the UFC
Who won?
Is.
I want to know who won.
Oh,
the wrestler? I'm sure. Right?
No, they clashed tied up, and then people broke them up because they were good friends. But that was a fight because DJ Johnson was one of the baddest dudes in the area. If he got listen, there'd be a fight and he would show up and the fight would stop. You know what I mean? And then Bobby Rose was just crazy because, like all wrestlers, I've learned through jiu-jitsu going up against wrestlers, they're just tenacious and they just don't stop.
Right.
You know, I remember being inside, one of my memories about wrestlers is I remember being inside now in track practice for indoor when I was doing track, whenever. But I was running. These guys started practice running. During practice, they ran. And at the end of practice, they ran. Right. And I'm training track, and they did more running than I did.
Right.
So that was just, remember, I just left a lasting impression on me.
Right.
So no, everyone wanted to see those two fight, but it never happened. But it would have been the greatest fight ever, right? Same thing with some of these fights that we're talking about with the UFC. Right. Like Conor McGregor versus, GSP.
Right.
That's the same thing. A world-class striker gets a world-class striker versus a world-class wrestler.
Well, St. Pierre is a world-class striker, too.
Yes, that's true, too. No disrespect, but for the sake of the story.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. He is a world-class striker. But you're correct.
Let's pretend he's not for the story, though.
Yeah, but even so, and then you can also say that, you know, Conor McGregor's a world-class jiu-jitsu player, I guess. But at the end of the day, like, what they're known for are those two elements. And to see them go at each other at such a high level,
right?
That's something you want to see, whether you understand it or not.
Right.
So I guess, like, I go back to the original question is, why do you think it's taken them so long to get the audience that they're struggling to really build?
You know, I don't really have a feel for what kind of audience they have because... Right. I don't know. I live in a bubble, maybe, but I mean, I don't really.
There's a lot of people that when you talk about UFC, they still think it's this blood sport, and they're under this. You can see that unless there's these big fights like Conor McGregor, or you know, a GSP, or these legends that step up, that they're not generating these big numbers that they should.
Right.
And I think, I mean, boxing, for whatever reason, the sports were built up differently, and even the WWE or WWF, whatever it is, they're built up differently. But with the UFC, it's just, it doesn't get the recognition that it should, you know? Granted, it's growing.
Right.
It's prolific, people like Conor and, you know, a lot of the new fighters that are coming up. It's growing. But it's still struggling, right? You know.
Well, and Ronda Rousey did a ton.
Oh, she did tremendous. You know, she did tremendous. But right now, I'm excited about the UFC more than I've ever been because I don't know if you saw UFC 230 that they just had with Israel.
No.
Oh, this guy.
See, I'm like anti UFC.
You're anti. Why do you? So you're one of the people I'm talking to.
I used to watch WEC.
Okay, what's the difference?
Oh, that was like they purchased the W. That's where Uriah Faber came from. That's where Ben Henderson came from. That's where Showtime Pettis came from. That's where dozens and dozens of really good UFC fighters came from. So, and they used to have more events. So I would watch a fight every night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you DVR it and then you...
All right, so let's see, what, have another question?
I think we should.
I got a good one for you. Are female jiu-jitsu black belts efficient against male jiu-jitsu blue belts?
Yeah.
That is a funny question. And I'm not laughing at the question, but I'm laughing at the question. Because, yeah, of course, a female... There's female blue belts that can beat male black belts, right? Because not all black belts are created equal.
Not oh, everybody. Yeah. If you got to talk about weight and everything. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
It's not a full question, I guess.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of not full questions on there.
And so we'll just blast through that one, but we kind of laughed it off. But no, I mean, a female black belt can kick anybody's ass up to another male or a female black belt.
Yeah.
You know, there's no limitation things. A female knows. I've been on the mat, like I said, I've been thrashed by a purple belt. Deja can thrash me.
Right.
And that's not saying anything to Deja. I'm just recognizing she's a purple belt and she will smash me. And she'll smash, she smashed brown belts, male brown belts and male and female brown belts. So when it comes to jiu-jitsu, there's no real limitation in that regard. It's just, how long have you been training? How well do you understand the technique and how capable are you to execute?
Right.
You know, that's what I think. Even with age, there's a 16-year-old kid that comes and trains at our gym. He's a savage.
Oh, yeah.
He's a savage.
Doesn't he already fight?
Yeah.
Amateur MMA?
Yeah, he already fights.
Trent?
You got it, Trent. He's a savage. Shout out to Trent. And you can just see, he just gets at a different level. He just understands a different level.
Right.
And to see someone like him roll with me, it's amazing because
he's a kid.
Yeah, he's a kid rolling up against a grown man, full grown man strength.
Right.
I'm one of the strongest people and one of the strongest people in the gym. And he's able to maneuver me, manipulate me, leverage everything.
Right.
And it's amazing to watch. So that's what I say. Another thing when you say, what thing do you want to learn to be able to defend yourself? To have a child be able to defend himself against a grown man.
Right.
If that's not, you know, sufficient enough to say. Then what is, really?
Right.
Right. Let's see. This is kind of fun. I'm liking this.
Yeah, I thought it might be something interesting. Oh, I wanted to mention, too. I'm playing with my phone here, but we do have a call-in number for the Church of Jiu-Jitsu, which is tcojj.com. And I will need to find it because I've never called that number before in my life. So let me find that number and I will just mention it. We'll put it in the show notes too, but it'd be neat to get some call-in questions. If not, that's fine. We can stick with the Quora.
The other thing is Anchor. Tell them a little bit about Anchor, how they can set up an account and ask you live questions to Anchor as well.
I don't know that I do that.
Oh, no.
Because I just use that as a tool.
Okay.
Just as a vehicle.
Well, what I was saying for my viewers that are listening to the What's Good podcast is if you can jump on Anchor and set up an account, it'll also be able to update you if you're not using like iTunes or anything. It updates you to new releases of episodes as soon as they happen. And in there, you have the feature where you can actually go in and leave me a voice note and, you know, comment on the show, ask a question that you might have about the show, bring up topics that you might want to discuss, and it goes right to me live. So that's also an option you have as a way of connecting to me and on the What's Good podcast. So let's say, so here's another one. What's the hardest part when you first start learning jiu-jitsu? It's a tricky question.
I would say
showing up.
Showing up, yep. And then that's once you're on the mat, showing up again.
Exactly.
Right. But that's, I think that's part of your DNA.
Yeah.
Or your personality or something.
And so that's the mental part of it, right? So then after the mental part comes the physical part. You're thinking, oh, well, physical means showing up. No, showing up means getting up off your butt and mentally committing yourself to making that decision to drive there.
Right.
Now, physically showing up means when you get on the mat, you actually perform. You know, you're actually pushing yourself. You're being honest with what you need to work on. You're pushing yourself to, you know, expand out of your comfort level. And those things are very, very hard when you're first starting jiu-jitsu, especially when you have a grown man on top of you that probably smells bad, that's probably dripping his sweat into your mouth.
That never happens.
Yeah, happens more times than people would like to admit. But I'm just letting I'm letting people know, you know, like, you know, when you're teaching people jiu-jitsu, everyone thinks that jiu-jitsu is, not everyone, but a lot of people think that jiu-jitsu is breaking bricks, some people, or kicks and all those things, but it's not. And when you look at the positions that you have to get into,
yeah,
with a male or with a female or an attractive male or attractive female, and this is just being real to people that are thinking about starting it, when you first do it, it's going to be uncomfortable. And I just want to be real with the level of uncomfortableness it is to start. But once you get out of it,
right,
that once you step over that level of uncomfortableness and you're over it, you grow up, so to speak, yeah, and you just realize, okay, I'm in this position so that I can learn to defend myself in a real life altercation, in a real life situation.
Right.
You get over it really, really quick.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I guess I just want to make people know that when they're listening to this, like, there's things that come up, it's going to be uncomfortable. But I'm letting you guys know, I'd rather you hear it now here on the podcast than experiencing inside the gym.
Right.
Because it's just like a fight. I'd rather learn what it's like to be put into an arm bar or an arm triangle on the gym.
Yeah.
On the mat, than right, if I was on the floor, yeah, or on the streets or in a war, you know? Another thing that I was uncomfortable for me with jiu-jitsu, what was hard with dealing with, is the injury part of it.
Right.
And I struggle with when I tell people to start training jiu-jitsu because I know that at some point they're going to be dealing with an injury. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a life-disabling injury.
Right.
But it
means
you're going to tweak something.
Yeah.
You're going to be uncomfortable.
But that happens in basketball. I rolled an ankle real bad when right, I was 35 playing basketball right, every Wednesday night.
That's true.
So, and you jam your fingers there more than you do at jiu-jitsu. Yeah. I mean, I had one of my pinky knuckles go back half an inch. And yeah, it wasn't a kid anymore. But I remember from high school, mm-hmm, and he did karate. So I was like, all right, I need somebody to pull my finger back. So the first person I looked for was the kid that I knew did karate in right, high school, because I know there'd be no, he would just do it.
Yeah.
I said, Scott Anderson was his name. He's from Argyle. And I remember walking over to him and just showing it to him, and he just went like that and fixed it. And I was like, oh, thank you. Because that's amazing. Just hurt. I mean, it was dislocated, you yeah, know, a good half inch back. I wanted to mention just one thing that you mentioned about the uncomfortableness. I never experienced that.
You never experienced uncomfortableness?
No, not like that. No.
Really?
No. But I'm glad you brought it up, because I would never even think to bring it up.
Right.
But everybody's different.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know what I mean? But I yeah, just want to make, I just want to say that, because yeah, I did not experience that.
That's good.
You know?
And that's good.
But I'm sure that so people do. But you know,
I'm glad you're saying it the same
way. That might be my anxiety didn't allow me to. You know what I mean? Because maybe I was so focused on what... But that's another reason why I like it, is because... Yeah, but
listen, you walk into a gym and you see someone like a Nick Johnson, or you see someone like... You
know, I don't get attracted to Nick like you do.
No, it's not even... He's a good-looking guy, but he's an intimidating-looking guy. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? If you saw him standing across from you, all right, you want to roll?
Right.
Your first is to say no.
Like, right, right.
That's what instinct tells you to say. And some people might say that about me when they see me on the mat.
Right.
But the whole or some people might say the same thing about you when they see you on the mat. But it's all about that pushing through that level of uncomfortableness.
Right.
And getting, you know, comfortable enough with your skill sets to say, okay, it doesn't matter, because all Nick Johnson is a different body type.
And here's an important thing too, though. If they're a higher belt,
yeah,
right, it's, I don't know, I'm pretty sure this is an unwritten rule. If you're a higher belt than somebody,
yeah,
kind of your responsibility to make sure that you don't hurt them.
Oh, of course.
You know
what I mean?
Especially, you know, purple to white, blue yeah, to white.
No, it's true.
But even
true,
blue to purple, mm-hmm, you know,
that might be serious.
Like a high-level blue belt yeah, versus somebody who just got their purple belt.
Yeah.
They might be a little bit more aggressive, right? Because they're close. Of course. And it'd be great for this guy to tap that
but
guy.
But it's not even, oh, yeah, yeah. You
know?
That, I think
there's that whole mental thing, yeah, you know?
Listen, I think I know for a fact that some of my largest growth and some of my biggest leaps and bounds have been rolling with the higher belts at C Corps, because they find that level of where that breaking point, and they
right,
they march you up and down.
And they know,
you know,
yeah,
they know. And
it's never been a fact that they intimidate me because of how I see Nick roll. The level that he rolls with C-Core is completely different than the level that he rolls with me. It's a whole different thing.
Right.
Same thing with Chris. Same thing with any of the high levels there. Right. You know? And I appreciate that. What I mean is, like, for the person that's just walking off the street and has someone like looks like Nick.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be like...
You're going to be... Yeah. You know?
But that's, one thing, though, like, I ask a lot of questions. You know, right. Like, I probably annoy the hell out of Eddie when I first started there, you know, because if I don't know, I'll ask.
You have to.
Because that's how you learn.
Exactly.
Right? And if I can save myself 3 months
yep.
by asking...
Then you're going to ask.
Yeah.
And this is the best way to do it.
And that applies to life too.
But yeah.
You know what I mean? But just ask.
No, I agree with you.
You know, what should I do? What should I be focusing on?
Yeah.
You know, and at white belt, it's survival, you know?
So what would you say to the viewers out there that are thinking about taking a self-defense class?
I would first recommend this book by Oliver Stark. It's an audio book on Audible, and it's also available on paperback. And it is called Zen Jiu-Jitsu White to Blue. And that talks about a lot of the stuff and more than what we just talked about.
Right.
And the reason I picked this up was because I wanted to drop that phone number off. But Zen Jiu-Jitsu White to Blue by Oliver Stark. And that's a three-part series. It does jiu-jitsu over 40, and then yep. there's some other 30-day jiu-jitsu thing. But that's a really good one for anybody, even if you're a purple belt, and maybe you feel like you're in a rut
right.
or a blue belt. But I used to listen to that on the way down, on the way back, and I have an hour drive down, an hour drive back.
Right.
So it's a five-hour journey right. every time I go down there, but, you know, I like it. But,
what I would say to someone that's thinking about taking defense, self-defense, is do it. Doesn't matter what your take. I mean, preferably, you're going to say that I'm going to pick jiu-jitsu, but if you have to learn something, even if it's boxing, some level of striking,
right.
learn some form of self-defense.
Yeah, you know? And you're not going to take any head trauma from jiu-jitsu as a rule.
No, and the thing with jiu-jitsu, why I prefer it is that you can go 100% as opposed with boxing. You're going 100%, but you're not really going 100% when you're sparring.
And that's one of the things they talk about in that book. That's why, it talks about just about every, it really right. hits on everything.
Right. Yeah. So I would definitely, if you're thinking about getting self-defense, take it. If you're looking, if you see someone out there for a class, take it. Because even just having that confidence to know if you get into that situation.
Right.
To do something. Just if someone sees that you're confident. That might prevent the attack to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
And then while they're attacking you, they see that you're defending proficiently. They always have the option to run away as well, too.
Right. So
if you have the opportunity, take a jiu-jitsu class. But if you can't and you're just thinking about taking self-defense, look it up and do it. Especially when you look outside your window and you see a lot of the changes that are going on.
Right.
You know, you think you know how to defend yourself until someone shows you. And then it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
And then then that's what you get the confidence from learning and saying, okay,
right.
this is what I thought, but this is reality.
And you'll also avoid situations.
Most definitely.
Because but number one, you don't want to fight.
Exactly.
You know,
and people ask me, now that I'm a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, do I want to go up and go around and F people up?
No.
No.
That's the last thing you want to do. But anything you want to de-escalate.
Exactly, because you know what it can turn into.
Right.
You know what a broken arm looks like.
You know what a head hitting concrete looks
like.
You
know, or sounds like, or feels like. Yeah. So you don't want any part of that. And you know when you get... And a lot of people say this with UFC. I was watching some of the training and some of the warming up, and they were saying muscle memory is a reaction. Muscle memory is a reflex.
Right.
Right? So if someone attacks me, I'm just going to react like a reflex.
Right.
And that could end with you being in a guillotine, you being in a rear naked.
Right.
But I'm going to squeeze, I'm going to apply pressure, and you're going to hurt.
Right.
And that's what I'm going to stop after you hurt.
Right.
Because I've been trained to, if this happens, then you react this, and this is going to de-escalate the situation.
Right.
And it's good to have those reflexes, because one day those reflexes could save your life.
Oh, know? Yeah. And if they're not there, they're not there.
If they're not you're there, not they're gonna, not there. Right. And it's good to know... This is the other day I was walking through Stewart's, and I saw one of the guys that I trained at, Eddie Fivey. I don't remember his name from the guys first training,
But I watched him walk through when he had a suit on. He just looked like this, like, this dopey businessman that was just having a gingerly day.
Right.
But little did I know, does the normal person know that this person, I think it was Chad, but I would know Chad. I think it was Chad, but I would know him.
Anyway. Chad's not dopey.
No, he's not, and that's not. So, yeah, that's, it wasn't, mean. It was not Chad. but anyway, he was walking. And he's a savage. He could literally choke me out. And just that be the other day and walk on.
Right.
And probably not even put a wrinkle in his suit. You know? And just to know if there's people walking around that are capable of that.
Yeah.
That's why as a blue belt, you don't go around fucking with people.
Right.
Because, yeah. You know, the person in the tie-dye t-shirt.
Right.
Or the purple, could be a purple belt or a brown belt or a black belt.
Right.
And just totally wipe the floor with you.
Yep.
And it's one thing when you see a 220-pound guy being... the floor being swept with another dude that's 140 pound,
right?
But me and you both know in jiu-jitsu that's very, very, that could very well be the case.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
that's kind of why I love it. I love that element of it,
right?
You know, when you walk up to someone you just met on the mat, you slap hands and you just put each other to the test,
right?
And I think that's why it's good to go to other gyms and train every once in a while.
Yeah.
To put yourself to that mental test.
Right.
To kind of keep yourself honest on what you know, what you don't know, what you should be working on.
Right. Because you do start to learn
tendencies.
Certain people's
tendencies and
strengths, weaknesses, right? Everybody has them. I have my own.
And then you start to favor that. Then you have people you like to roll with because you might, you know, beat them more often than you lose to them. And
right.
Then there's people you don't roll with at all because you always lose to them. And you got to be honest with yourself and say, okay, if I want to get to the next level, then those people that I don't want to roll with are the ones I should be rolling with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And none of them are going to hurt you. You just know it's not as difficult. It's not as easy to get through the roll.
Right.
Or it's too difficult to get to the roll. And those are the ones that are going to make you grow.
Well, I grappled with Michael Backus, the tattoo dude.
Yeah.
And, he's awesome. He's a great guy.
Shout out to Michael.
Yeah, and he didn't hurt me. He's a big dude.
Yeah,
you know, and he's a highly technical guy as well. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's what they call it, that gentle art, right?
Here's a good example of jiu-jitsu. Okay, mm-hmm. When Nate Diaz came to, I don't remember where the seminar was, but. Saratoga City Center, maybe.
Yeah, it was the Civic Center.
Okay. Yeah. Or City Center.
City Center, yep.
So he was showing a guard breaking. I think he was using Sherwin as...
I saw the pictures, yeah.
And so I think I was training with... I forget who I went there with or who my training partner was. But I wanted to see how was this going to work against somebody that's 300 pounds when I'm 150 or 160 pounds.
Yeah.
So I looked and I saw Michael Backus and I said... Can I try this on you? And he's like, you know, he looks at me, yeah, if you want, you know, and it worked. So I was able to lift up a dude that's way bigger than me and get him off the ground.
Wow.
You know, 300 pound dude.
Just by using the technique.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't mean he's going to let me do it, but the fact that the mechanics of that work, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, I just wanted the call-in number here. If you want to call in and leave a message with any questions, comments, if you want to scream at me, that's fine too, is 518-504-7470. And again, that call-in number, if you want to leave a message, have any questions, comments, ideas, anything, it's 518-504-7470, and the Church of Jiu-Jitsu can be found at the initials for the Church of Jiu-Jitsu. It's TCOJJ.com. I should call it the Church of Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. So I guess we'll call it that. So you want to call that a wrap, sir?
Let's call it a wrap. I thought that was a great episode.
All right, and hopefully next Wednesday we will have Mr. Eddie Fivey in here. So,
Eddie Fivey is going to be on your show?
Yes.
That's going to be an excellent episode. How long?
He said he was.
Of course. But Eddie Fivey is one of those guys, if he says he's going to do something, then it gets done.
Oh, he'll definitely.
So that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So. Awesome. Well, I wish you good luck on that. Wish you good luck with your call-ins. That's going to be exciting when that gets up and kicking because...
Yeah.
that type of interaction is always great.
Yeah, and you know, leave a message up to 2 minutes or something like that. Right, there's exactly. No special answer machine when you call. Yeah. It's just going to say, this caller is not available. Please leave a message, and that'll be...
So to let the viewers know, this is something that we're going to be doing on a regular basis, you know? We've been working with each other when we started the podcast, and we continue to.
Right.
I'm learning a lot, and it's just been a lot of fun, and it's been great partnering with you and kind of growing the business
with
the podcast together.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
It's been way more fun than by yourself.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's a lot of work.
So, I'd like to thank everybody over at Matt Secord. They've been just the audience. Everyone over there has just been great. The support's been out of control, and just appreciate the love. A lot of these guys have already agreed to some interviews, so we're gonna get that rolling. I'm really excited to have some of those guys on there as a guest. So just stay tuned for that and for new episodes. And if you haven't subscribed, subscribe to both of our podcasts. And just keep the support coming in.
Yeah, that'd be great. And any feedback is always appreciated.
Exactly. So that's pretty much it.
All right. Let's wrap it up. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.